From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, April 16th. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. Normally, you'll hear us bandying about all kinds of ideas about what's happened in politics, but this is another one of our special podcasts as we get a chance to bring you conversations with the candidates for governor who are running this year. A few weeks ago, you heard from Attorney General Jerry Brown, the Democratic candidate, likely to be the Democratic nominee once the June primary comes and goes. And of course, in the Republican side, it's a contested race, Meg Whitman and Steve Poizner. This week on Wednesday, I sat down and spoke with Steve Poizner, the incumbent insurance commissioner who wants to be governor. As you know, Steve Poizner running a campaign where he has been the underdog over the last few weeks, and the polls have shown him significantly behind Whitman. But we began the conversation actually with that very issue, talking about not only those polls, but just the sense with about 6 weeks left to go in this race of whether or not he thinks he can come back. Here's what he had to say, and here's what he had to say about a lot of issues. Steve Poizner.
Well, first of all, I think you and your listeners will fully understand that if you spend $50 million, you know, like Meg Whitman has, on TV and radio starting, you know, last October, you're going to drive up your name ID. Now, of course, we've been closely studying this, and we ask people, you know, why are you supporting whoever you're supporting? And in the case of Meg Whitman, her support's a mile long and a half an inch thick. They barely know her. They don't know much about her. They don't know much about me. All that's been changing drastically in the last few weeks. Of course, I didn't want to spend $50 million, you know, last year and in the early part of this year. I've saved my resources to the end. I have lots of resources here to get the word out. We've been advertising aggressively on radio and television, getting the message out. I expect the next poll will be a lot different than the poll that was taken a month ago.
And so given that you feel that support for your opponent is so thin, and then you said also people are just learning about you, how do you get that out? Because there's a – obviously in any campaign, there's a 1-2 kind of thing. You need to explain who your opponent is and explain who you are. You think you'll be able to do both at this
point? Yeah, absolutely. The thing that would worry me the most, honestly, is that if Meg Whitman and I were similar, if our backgrounds were the same – if our positions on key issues were very similar, that'd be an issue because then, you know, what am I going to be advertising about? But that's not the case here. Meg Whitman and I couldn't be any different. Our backgrounds are vastly different, and our positions on key issues that are important to Republican primary voters are hugely different. I mean, for example, I have 20 years of experience at starting and running companies from scratch. Meg's never started a company. I have experience at actually being in politics before. I've, you know, run statewide successfully. Meg's never been in politics. Meg's barely even voted, as we all know. She maybe voted once, maybe twice in 28 years. I've actually taken a large state agency here in Sacramento and downsized it. I've decreased the operating expenses at my Department of Insurance permanently by 15%. I've demonstrated I can get things done here in Sacramento. Meg has no experience whatsoever. And on key policy matters, and we can get into this more later, I'm sure, but on taxes, on illegal immigration, even on government funding of abortions, there's some vast differences. Meg doesn't support across-the-board tax increases. Excuse me, tax cuts. She definitely opposes across-the-board tax cuts. I support across-the-board tax cuts, and that's a huge difference. I want to take steps to end illegal immigration once and for all by stopping government funding of taxpayer benefits for illegals. She doesn't. And when it comes to abortion, even there's some important differences, as I just mentioned. I want to stop government funding of abortion. She doesn't. So the differences in our background and on positions, on policy matters, are so different. We're going to be able to get that message out through aggressive, bold advertising. We're in the process of doing that right now. And when that happens, the Republican primary voters are going to come my way.
And you feel like you see things changing out on the campaign trail?
No question about it. I mean, the difference in terms of turnout at town halls, the number of callers who call into radio shows. I mean, people are seeing and hearing my advertising. They're figuring out that I'm the conservative with a track record in this race, and I know that the numbers are moving as we speak.
So let me talk about that notion that you're the conservative with a track record, and the first part of that, conservative.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's been made in this race about your political philosophy. Are you a conservative? Did you used to be a moderate Republican? Obviously, you'd run for office before in the Bay Area. So let's try to clear that up. How do you define yourself? What are you politically speaking?
Well, I've been a conservative all my life. I must say I've gotten even more clear about my political philosophy, and my conservative principles have crystallized over the last 4 or 5 years since I've been able to be heavily involved in politics, being the insurance commissioner, being here in Sacramento, this has been an eye-opener. You know, so you start with a conservative like me, and you bring him to Sacramento, and where I can see the waste, the culture of corruption, the unnecessary taxes, the wasteful spending. And now I'm really quite clear what the problems are. And when I first got involved in politics during my assembly race, the unemployment rate was half of what it is today. The budget deficit, you know, wasn't as serious. Now, you know, spending has gone through the roof since 2004, and debt's gone through the roof. The state's gone through basically a collapse right now. So I've crystallized, you know, my principles and my vision. And so what I'm describing here to Republican primary voters is exactly what you're going to hear from me in the general election. These are my views, my deep down seated views about the problems facing the state of California and the solutions. And I'm being really specific and clear about my views because I want voters to send me to Sacramento with a mandate. And the only way that I can get a mandate is by being very clear on the campaign trail.
What do you make then, just really quickly, though, of the way that politics works, which is whatever you have said in the past, if it doesn't match up with what you say now, there's a problem? Because the way I hear you describe it, not to compare you completely to the Democratic candidate who's had 40 years in politics, but he talks about, there's a discussion of an evolution of his ideas. There's a discussion almost of you and an evolution or at least a clearer understanding of what's going on than that first time you ran for office.
Well, and, you know, my opponent has made that the centerpiece of her nasty negative attack campaign. And much of what she describes about my past is either wrong or half-truths or misleading. Now the fact is, conditions have changed in the state of California. I've never run for governor before, never been insurance commissioner until 3 years ago. I now have a lot more information. And so my reform agenda is based on my experiences here and on my core principles. And, you know, I'm just proud of my record. And I've been a conservative, like I say, all of my life and gotten even more so, you know, several years now being here in Sacramento.
Talk about some of the issues that have come up in the race. But first, I want to talk about I'm curious about your views of the incumbent governor, of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It seems as though you've been supportive of him sometimes in the past. He certainly seems supportive of you some in the past. But things apparently have changed. You've got a campaign ad that even talks about, you know, you need a real Republican. And so I'm curious, what do you make of the last 7 years of Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor?
When Governor Schwarzenegger and I first teamed up, you know, working on projects together, his views and mine were pretty similar. And then now his passions and his priorities have just changed. You know, when we were working together on redistricting reform, on no new taxes, on making the jobs creating environment, you know, more attractive for innovators, that was years ago. Now, you know, he's spearheaded some major tax increases. He's become, you know, the champion for global warming around the world when, in fact, that's not what he was hired to do. The budget deficit has ballooned under his watch. The unemployment rate has doubled. Taxes have gone way up.
What do you think changed?
I think that the governor is a great man. I really like him. I think his heart's in the right place. But he and I are just vastly different people. I do have a set of core principles that really guide my decision-making. And if I go out and try to accomplish something politically and I lose the first time, then I'm going to try it again. And then I'm going to try it again until we succeed. And I'm going to, you know, continue to work on putting coalitions of people together until we can actually accomplish real problem-solving. I think the governor's been pretty erratic, and it's, you know, it's time for a change.
You talk about being in Sacramento, and you got to see close up a lot of the things that go on here. And one of the things that we hear about a lot is about that the system of government is broken and needs to be fixed in California, that we have a systemic problem. Do you think it's broken? General view, and first?
I do think it's broken. I think that it broke in the late 1960s, and we've been suffering ever since. When the legislature became full-time in the late 1960s, I think you saw a class of professional politicians emerge, and a culture of corruption that quickly followed from, you know, this professional politician, this career politician from both parties now. See, from 1850 to 1967, California had a part-time legislature. And then after 1967, the voters, you know, made a decision to change it, unfortunately. And now I think we've been suffering. There's been a dysfunctional legislature for many decades now. Now, 42 states have a part-time legislature. And as I mentioned, so did California. I think we want people in the legislature that have the wisdom from coming from the trenches, from both parties. You know, doctors and nurses and teachers and police officers and small business people who have real-world experiences. Those are the folks that we want in the legislature. That's why I so strongly support a part-time legislature.
And you think the legislature is the fundamental problem? I mean, I'm just curious, are there others? Or are there...
The legislature is dysfunctional decision-making body, and it needs to be overhauled and reformed. I think that's one of the key problems. I also think, frankly, that public employee unions, is under Governor Brown's first time as governor, is that's when he authorized public employees to unionize for the first time. Now, I have a lot of public employee union members that work for me at the Department of Insurance, and I just got to tell you, they're wonderful people. I have some fantastic people at the Department of Insurance, and I know that most state employees, they're public employee union members, but they're dedicated public servants, and I'm proud to know many of them. But the fact is, the public employee union leadership has gotten to be way too powerful, and even Willie Brown, Bill Lockyer, the chief actuary from CalPERS, they've all concluded, wow, these public employee unions have negotiated using their political power pension deals that just aren't economic for the state of California anymore. So I also think that we need to curb public employee union power somehow. I mean, they take money out of the paychecks of public employee union members without the permission of the public employees. And I support the idea that the public employee union member should give permission first before any of their paycheck money is being used for political purposes. Now, if a public employee wants to use money for political purposes, more power to them. That's their constitutional right. But right now, these gigantic war chests can be formed very quickly. And I'm just being honest about it. I know when I say these kinds of things, I become a target. And I understand the political consequences of being a truth teller here, but I'm just trying to be honest with people. I'm not trying to be a partisan warrior either. I'm trying to be the effective leader for all Californians. We have to fix the legislature. Career politicians have really trashed it. Public employee union power has gotten out of hand. And those two things, are very serious issues that the voters of the state of California are just going to have to address.
Well, in light of some of the things you said that you've talked about, that you say you're telling the truth, and sometimes you get dinged for that. I mean, that kind of segues into what I wanted to ask you about the issues that come up in this campaign. You've chosen to spend a lot of time on the issue of illegal immigration. First off, let me ask you, why?
Well, I've been studying the problems of the state of California now for many years. I was elected insurance commissioner, three some odd years ago. And I've been able to do an assessment. People hired me. I'm only one of eight elected statewide officials. As insurance commissioner, I oversee the entire insurance markets. I have 16 offices. I travel up and down the state extensively. And the fact is, I'm now convinced that illegal immigration is a serious problem facing the state of California. Not the only problem. Surely we have many other problems. We've talked about some of them. But I've seen the public schools from the inside. I was a school teacher, volunteer teacher for a while. I've visited a lot of emergency rooms. I've noticed that we can't balance the budget here. We spend billions of dollars a year on taxpayer-funded benefits for people that are here illegally. Our healthcare system, our public education system is overwhelmed for a bunch of reasons, and it's deteriorating right now. So in the spirit of being a truth teller, and I know a lot of politicians don't have the guts to bring this up, but honestly, illegal immigration is a problem that we have to address. Now, legal immigration, John, has been fantastic for California. It's one of the backbones. It's been a boon to be able to have people come here legally. And I support making the legal immigration pipeline as big as possible. That's essential that people understand that I am pro-immigration.
So much of this, though, is a federal issue. Immigration issues is not a state-driven issue. I mean, certainly as the governor of the largest state in the country and a state that deals with it and the border being where it is, that person has a voice, but they don't get to make the decisions. And so I guess one of the questions would be, it's an awful lot of time to spend in the campaign on an issue of which you have very little control as governor.
Well, I just don't think that's true. And I know that Meg Whitman says that a lot on the campaign trail. This is a federal issue. She doesn't really want to deal with this issue. Like most politicians, they don't want to deal with it. But let me tell you what I would do.
Tell me what you could do then, yeah.
A lot you can do as governor. First of all, as governor, I'm going to enforce the rules on employers. The current law requires that employers hire people here in California if and only if they are legal residents or citizens. Now, that doesn't happen often. Now, as governor, I'm going to use my executive authority and I'm going to revoke the business license of any company that hires people that are here illegally. Now, the jobs magnet is a huge magnet. People come to the state of California illegally for at least a couple reasons. And one is for jobs. If we turn that jobs magnet off, that's going to impact people's thinking about whether to come here or not. Now, the second thing I'm going to do as governor is that I'm going to, you know, work as hard as I can with the legislature or through ballot initiatives to end the funding of taxpayer benefits to people that are here illegally. 10 states have passed laws since 1996 that have ended taxpayer-funded benefits for people that are here illegally. Example, you can go to a California college and university, be here illegally, and still pay in-state tuition. And that's just not right. You can get access to non-emergency health care if you're here illegally. That's not right either. We just can't afford it anymore. We have a $20 billion-plus budget deficit. We just can't afford this. Now, at the same time, I want to be very careful about how we phase these programs out. Californians, we're very compassionate people. And so, you know, we don't have to abruptly end these programs tomorrow, but there needs to be some date certain where we can gracefully wind down these incentives, these magnets that draw people here illegally. The best thing that can happen is that if people decide that if they're already here illegally, they decide to go home. And if they're not here right now but thinking of coming here illegally, the best decision that could happen is that they decide not to come here illegally in the first place. That's why I really want to focus my attention as governor on these magnets, these incentives.
Well, you spent a lot of time in the campaign talking about the national issue of amnesty. And so let me just ask you about that for a moment, because trying to understand how you define amnesty, because in looking at some of the different ways that people have been asked this question, it's somewhat complicated. And one of the things I was struck by the most is that you've been critical of Meg Whitman, you've been critical of President Obama on an issue of amnesty, say they have the same position. When that position is defined, even in the television ad that you're talking about a path to legalization, when Californians were asked that, when Republicans, when conservatives were asked that in the LA Times poll, they all supported that version of a path to legalization, which seems to put you at odds even with conservatives in California.
You know, I got to say that I'm glad you bring it up, because in one sense, I want people to know that I'm not a poll-driven candidate. And we know my opponent can't say that. I mean, you know, just look at her expense reports. You know, I can't believe how many polls she's taken. I guess it must be close to $1 million of focus groups and polls where every word's carefully crafted. But the fact is, what I believe to be the case is amnesty is a policy whereby people are allowed to stay here even though they've violated the law in coming here in the first place. Now, you know, some people say, well, yeah, but they have to pay fines and they get the end of the line and all that. But they're still have violated the law and they're allowed to short-circuit the process for citizenship. And I think that's wrong. Now, the last time we did amnesty as a country was in 1986. And there were
under President Reagan.
I remember who it was. And there was about 3 or 4 million people that were here illegally at the time. And amnesty was granted. And now we have 12 million people here illegally, maybe more. So amnesty is, you know, falls into the category, and from my point of view, of another magnet. Now, you know, if amnesty is granted again, it's just like sending a message around the world that says, you know, you come here illegally, sooner or later, you know, this country will allow you to get a path to citizenship that short-circuits the process. And I think that's the wrong message to send. It's just going to encourage more people to come here illegally. Now, this is a country of laws. This is the rule of law. And most people who come here legally, it is, I think, a false notion that somehow they support, you know, amnesty or they support illegal immigration. They don't. And this poll that you're referring to, it was an interesting poll and all, but didn't use the word amnesty at all in the whole, you know, taking of that poll. I think when you ask people, you know, the full description of here's the situation, you have taxpayer-funded benefits for people that are here illegally. You have jobs that people can get even though they're here illegally. You have amnesty that's being proposed by people like Meg Whitman. And then if you put all that into a package, is that going to encourage more illegal immigration, yes or no? And I think people will come to the conclusion, and maybe it's going to require a little bit more advocacy from me, I think they're going to come to the conclusion that all those policies are wrong and bad for the state of California.
Let me ask you about some tax issues and stuff as we kind of get here towards the back end of being able, of our time. A big part of what you've been talking about are taxes, tax cuts to solve part of the problem. I mean, in addition to a larger problem, in addition to a larger proposal to fix the state's budget problems. You're advocating cuts, but, there's also been a lot of talk about reform of the tax system. Big changes. We had a commission that talked about that. Do you support any of that? Do you support any of those ideas that have been floated about reform, not just cuts?
Yeah, I carefully studied the tax commission report, went to one of the meetings. I sure agree with their high-level conclusion that the tax system's broken and needs major overhaul. Now, I disagree with some of the conclusions they came to, some of the specifics. They were proposing this new business value added tax, which I think has a lot of disadvantages, would discourage job creation, really a bad idea. But I do like, the broad conclusion that Republicans and Democrats on that panel reached, the tax system is a problem. So I would support, some other major overhaul ideas potentially in the future. But first things first, we're in the middle of a meltdown, worst economic crisis in 160 years. We need urgent action to bring jobs back to the state of California. Now, we've had some discussions about this before. The fact is we will never balance the budget, in my opinion, ever, until we bring more jobs back to the state of California. And that's only going to happen if California becomes competitive again in this intensely competitive global economy. There's a lot of things that make this state not competitive any longer. One of the main things, in my opinion, is the super high tax structure that we have. We have over 900 different taxes and fees, 900 of them. And if you add up all the taxes that we pay and divide by the population, that's the per capita tax burden, it's 50% higher than many of the other Western states. I mean, no wonder people pick up and leave because of the high taxes. They leave for other reasons too, but the high taxes is one of them. So one of the centerpiece issues of my whole campaign is to cut taxes in order to bring more jobs back. Now, if our taxes were at the national average and you cut taxes, you may not get the economic stimulus effect that I'm counting on, that I'm confident of. But when you have a tax structure that's one of the highest in the country and you lower taxes in a big, bold way like I'm proposing, then you're going to get an immediate positive impact.
Well, and I was going to ask you, because you do believe it's an almost instantaneous, immediate impact. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but some of the numbers trying to understand what existing tax revenues would go away, be replaced by even more. But I mean, if you look at some of the math that some of your advisors even told me, you're talking about like $1.5 billion to the positive in year one from your tax cuts. That could be a very large swing of taxes, because I mean, it could be about $10 billion less in existing revenues. I guess my point is, you really believe in the supply side economics version here, that you put that money back into the economy, it comes back tenfold or however many fold.
Yeah, and I read your blog today, and I read your analysis, and I know that what I'm saying, not everyone's going to agree with. I do know this. We've tried the other approach. The other approach is to raise taxes and fees to try to balance the budget. And John, the jury's in on that. We've tried that a dozen times now in the last 10 years. It's been a disaster, complete disaster. Now, over a year ago, Governor Schwarzenegger and the legislature raised taxes by $25 billion over 2 years. That was the largest tax increase in the history of tax increases. And it was very regressive. Sales taxes went up, vehicle license fees went up, and income taxes. Now, that put an extra tax burden of about $1,000 on the backs of every family in the state of California on average. Now, a $1,000 hit to an average family of four that makes a little over $50,000 a year, where they're struggling to make their mortgage payments, I mean, that's just terrible. Horrible public policy. And what's the result? They said that would balance the budget. It was the largest tax increase in the history of tax increases. So fast forward a year. Here we are. Taxes went up by $25 billion, and we still have a $20 billion plus budget deficit, and jobs continue to leave. Now, you can look at the Census Bureau numbers. They're the scorekeeper here. They're the objective. They just count the people as they leave. 3,000 a week. 3,000 people a week pick up and leave the state of California each and every week. We've lost 1 million people over the last 5 years. That's had a devastating impact. These are taxpayers that are leaving. Now, our population continues to grow despite the exodus because of illegal immigration and birth rates. So this is the worst of all worlds, the perfect storm. taxpayers leaving, consumers of government services coming in, no wonder we can't balance the budget. What I'm proposing is to just take into account the fact that we already have the highest tax structure in the country, but we live in the most beautiful state in the country. Fantastic natural resources, great people, great culture. If we simply made it more economic, people will come back. They'll come back immediately. And not only come back here, you'll have businesses who will decide to expand here instead of the Ciscos and the Hewlett-Packards and the Intels deciding to expand elsewhere. So, you know, this is I believe this down to my bones. I'm passionate about it. But we did do our economic analysis of it too. And we found many examples of tax revenues going up after tax rates went down, you know, in states around the country who implemented bold across-the-board tax cuts. And so what we're proposing is not, you know, not very aggressive. It's pretty modest. We've been pretty conservative. You know, the first year, about 1.5% increase in taxes. The second year, it grows to 3 or 4% and goes beyond that because, you know, over time, it does build. But I think that's underestimating the impact. I mean, there's a pent-up demand. People want to be in California if it would simply get out of the way.
Since we're so short on time, let me just make sure that we know where you stand on a couple of quick things and then ask you a final question. So I don't want to call it a lightning round because that minimizes the importance of it.
Yeah.
But they're just things that we don't get to talk about as much in the campaign. Oil drilling off the coast of California. Do you support it?
Yes. I don't support building any new platforms because there's existing, modern, sophisticated slant drilling technology that will allow us to drill more offshore oil wells from onshore or from existing platforms, environmentally safe, but the slant drilling technology allows for things that you couldn't do 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. There's billions of oil barrels of oil off our coastline. We need to become more energy independent. Absolutely. It would create another revenue source for the state of California, too. That'd be a good thing. But if we insist on or we allow Virginia and the Gulf Coast and Saudi Arabia, I mean, we don't no one's screaming about drilling off their coasts or on their land. I mean, we have to step up and do our part to become energy independent, and more offshore oil drilling in an environmentally safe way is one thing that we need to do. We also need to expand nuclear power plants. I have solar cells on my roof. We need to continue to invest heavily in renewables. So we need to do all these things combined in order to become more energy independent. We import 30% of all of our electricity now, much of it from dirty coal-burning fire plants in the Midwest. We've got work to do here.
And a social issue, which you have mentioned, but forgive me for trying to use the labels that are out there, but people understand the labels to a certain extent. When we talk about abortion and a woman's right to choose, do you define yourself as willing to let women make that decision, or would you like to see government rules outlawing abortion? I think that's the – rather than getting into the whether we think it's – you know, there should be fewer abortions, I'm just trying to understand, do you believe government has a role to stop it, or is it –
I do oppose late-term abortions. Those should be outlawed. But I don't support, you know, outlawing all abortions. That's why I was pro-choice before, you know, in previous campaigns. I'm still pro-choice from that matter. But I do want to drive down the number of abortions. And this is where I differ from some people, like Meg Whitman and others. I don't think abortion is just another medical procedure. I think it deserves special attention, and we do need to drive the number of abortions down. That's why I do support now parental notification. I support stopping government funding of abortions, and I do want to take some, you know, positions as governor that will help reduce the number of abortions, short of outlawing them all. I want to streamline the number of adoptions. And of course, Meg Whitman and I mean, here's, you know, we have differences here.
Yeah. I didn't leave any time really to ask this question, but as a Capital reporter, I have to ask you about what I observe as one of the fundamental things about what governors do. And that is working, you want to work outside the system and you want to change the system, but you have to work somehow with the people who run government. You talked about the legislature earlier. Governors struggle with legislators all the time. It's a co-equal branch of government. Just as a kind of a concluding thing for us here, what do you do as governor to change that dynamic? Arnold Schwarzenegger has struggled with them. Gray Davis has struggled with the legislature. We could have lots of discussion about whether that just is the way things are. What do you do? How do you change, if you can, that dynamic?
Well, it's not going to be easy because of entrenched forces.
Well, that's true.
But we're in the middle of a crisis, a meltdown. And that's why the way I run for governor is so essential, because I need a mandate when I'm elected governor. send me to Sacramento here with marching orders, and that will give me extra political clout to deal with the legislature. But note that I have the skills. I have a track record. At the Department of Insurance, I've completely overhauled the place. And the legislature has had to approve everything that I've done there. So I've had to negotiate with the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature to invest millions in new technology into the Department of Insurance, while at the same time I've reduced the operating expenses by 15%. All of my employees, most of them, are lifetime civil servants and belong to public employee unions. And so at the Department of Insurance, I've demonstrated I have the ability to get things done there as well. So this track record is going to be important because I do think voters are cynical. About, you know, we've heard that before. It's easy for politicians to say, can you get it done? In fact, how on earth are you going to get anything done? You know, even if we agree with it, and let's say, you know, people agree with my ideas here, they're bold, they're sweeping, it addresses the crisis, but how are you going to get anything done? I have a 30-year track record of accomplishing things that most people thought were impossible. 20 years of starting and running companies from scratch, very successfully, and now 8 years of success in public service. In the White House during the 9/11 crisis, helping to build a new Homeland Security plan. In the classroom, helping to build the charter school movement, running successfully statewide as insurance commissioner, being able to completely modernize the Department of Insurance. That track record is going to make a huge difference in this campaign.
And again, that was Steve Boisner, Republican candidate for governor, current state insurance commissioner, who I spoke to earlier this week. And our interview in its entirety, hopefully we'll get to talk to Meg Whitman in one of those same kind of sit-down interviews before the June primary. Next week, we'll be back with our normal, somewhat loose and, I don't know, smart-alecky version of California politics. In the meantime, I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for listening.